Kevin's a councilman in Lakewood now. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, starting there in verse number 8, we'll read down through the end of the chapter. If thou seest the oppression of the poor, let me start that again. If thou seest the oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter. For he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. Moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travail. And he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. And he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all the points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that labored for the wind? All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with his sickness. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink, and to enjoy the good of all his labor, that he taketh unto their son all the days of his life which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor, for this is the gift of God. For he hath not much, for he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. Let's go ahead and pray. Father in heaven, Lord, I love you. Lord, I ask your blessing upon the message tonight. I pray that the truth of what we're seeing here be clear, that would help us, that it would truly and genuinely draw us closer to you. Father, please do a work in our hearts tonight. I pray this time would not be in vanity. Please. Please, Lord, I beg you that your word would work. And so certainly know I need your mercy and your grace, Lord. And please work tonight and help us. And Lord, I pray and ask all this in Christ's name. Amen. It's an election year. And of course, you do need to be praying about the election and all that's going on in our nation right now. And we certainly know the Lord is in control. But we're going to be voting here soon. And I hope all of us are certainly planning on doing just that, to vote. But each election year, we see a rise in class conflict. No different this year. Matter of fact, we're seeing a lot of the violence that's taking place as a result of over the decades and election cycles of class conflict that rises with every election. We have the liberals portraying all those with money and who make a good income as evil and selfish and not willing to pay their fair share. They make their money off the backs of others and do nothing but oppress the poor. That's the portrait they want to do to try and get votes. Then you have those on the other side that also like to paint their own picture on the right, that they just want to paint the poor as lazy, unmotivated, and just looking for a handout from the government. Many times Christians even get into the fray of going back and forth, or those who want to try and use the Bible to support their viewpoint on both sides. They'll try and use proof text. You know, the ones on the liberal side will try and use proof texts that point to the rich as wicked and oppressors of the poor and the virtues of poverty. Then those on the right, they also have their text, their proof text they like to use as the rich blessed by God and wealth and so on and so on. But the truth is, biblically, there's not two categories of rich and poor. There's four. We see all four of those in our text. There's two kinds of rich. There's a righteous rich and an unrighteous. There's two kinds of poor, a righteous poor and an unrighteous as well. We need to know that for the foundation of this message to understand where he's going. Once that's in place, you begin to see how this message unfolds and the importance truth that it's giving us. The focus, of course, is dealing with the problems primarily with the sinful heart in regards to wealth. The sorrow that living for wealth brings to a life that is living a life apart from God. Our text, though, ends with a great truth on the key to genuine joy in life, whether rich or poor. It doesn't matter. We're going to look at, I'm going to divide our verses here into three sections, 3 points here this evening. The first one is going to be a real perversion of riches. Number two, the real sorrow of riches. And lastly, real joy in life regardless of riches is how it ends, 18 through 20. But first off, just the first couple of verses, verse 8 and 9, we see perversion of riches and power. We'll read again verse number 8 and 9. It says, if thou seest the oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter. For he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they. Moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. Now what we see here is we have those who are in power abusing their power to gain wealth. Contextually here we're dealing with government. They're saying it does it in two ways in the verse, by oppressing the poor or by perverting of justice. One is a disregard of justice, the other distorts it, both to some selfish means and end. Those in power can use their position to obtain wealth. One of the best examples that come to mind when you read this verse, we have it perfectly laid out. Look in 1 Kings chapter 21. Here is an example both of the oppression and perversion of justice so that one can gain wealth. Start there in verse number 1. And it came to pass after these things that Naboth, that Jezreelite, had a vineyard which was in Jezreel, hard by the palace of Ahab, king of Samaria. Now, to understand what's taking place here, by the way, you have to actually go back to the law. We're not going to do all that because this is not a message on Ahab and Jezebel getting the ground, the land of Naboth. Land was divided out. You had land that belonged to you. There was no changing that. There was even provisions in place. If there was a selling of it or a leasing of it, that would all be undone and go back to the family at some certain point. And so his land happens to go right up to some property that was owned by King Ahab. So anyhow, let's continue. Ahab spake to Naboth, saying, give me thy vineyard that I may have it for a garden of herbs, because it is near unto my house. And I will give thee for it a better vineyard than it, or if it seem good to thee, I will give thee the worth of it in money. And Naboth said to Ahab, thinking of the law, by the way, the Lord forbid it me that I should give the inheritance of my fathers unto thee. He's referring back to a law that's in place. He said, we can't do this. And Ahab came into his house heavy and displeased because of the word which Naboth the Jezreelite had spoken to him. For he said, I will not give thee the inheritance of my fathers. And he laid him down upon his bed and turned away his face and would eat no bread. He's pouting. But Jezebel, his wife, came to him and said unto him, why is thy spirit so sad that thou eatest no bread? He said unto her, because I spake unto Naboth the Jezreelite, and said unto him, give me thy vineyard for money, or else if it please thee, I will give thee another vineyard for it. And he answered, I will not give thee my vineyard. Now what she's going to remind him of here is, hold on a second, you're in power. You can abuse your power however you want right now. He has none. You can oppress, you can pervert, you can do exactly what those verses are talking about. And that's the advice she gives. And Jezebel, his wife, said unto him, dost thou now govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread and let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth, the Jezreelite. So she wrote letters in Ahab's name and sealed them with his seal and sent the letters unto the elders and to the nobles that were in the city dwelling with Naboth. And she wrote in the letter saying, proclaim a fast and set Naboth on high among the people. and set two men, sons of Belial, before him to bear witness against him, saying, Thou didst blaspheme God and the king. And then carry him out and stone him that he may die. And for time's sake, we're not going to read on here, but if you go on, that's exactly what takes place. You see an abuse of the power. Him using his power against somebody who did not have it so he could gain what he wanted. That's what it's referring to. But I was going to read on all the way down to 17 and 18. Ahab's going to find the same problem that the verse talks about. There's somebody higher than him that sees, even though he's the king, because God sends Elijah to him. The Lord already knows. But there's before God, understand, there's nothing that's going to be accomplished that God is not going to judge for. Nothing. Nobody's going to get away with anything before God. Ahab did not hear. But nonetheless, we see an example of that, that there are those who can obtain wealth and they can do it by perverted means, especially those who are in a power position government-wise. Verse 9, it says it would be best, basically, the truth of verse 9 is saying that best that both just work together. The fact is, even the king needs those laborers working in the field. It's how we all eat. And then from verse 10 to 17, it's the second point, the real sorrow of riches. It's going to lay a foundation that is going to give us six troubles or sorrows that come with wealth. Verse number 10 first, though. Oh, let me get back there. He that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This is also vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. And what good is there to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eyes? Let me cover verse 10 here first. We'll get into this. Now, as we see, there's no satisfaction in riches. There's already been two times in the book of Ecclesiastes we covered where Solomon's talked about a man not being able to be satisfied. The first was in chapter 1 and verse 8 where the eye is not satisfied with seeing. And a life that was apart from God, just that constant, you know, never able to be satisfied. Chapter 4, we saw it again, of course, with somebody working in all his labor, gaining and gaining, never ceasing. There's no air to it. How there's just never a satisfaction. Maybe it'll be just the next thing. If I just get to this place where I work, if I just get to this position, but there's never a satisfaction. Same thing here when it comes to money. There's just never a satisfaction. When this is apart, this is life apart from God. There's never a true satisfaction. It can't satisfy. They think, well, if I just get to this, if I can just get to $5 million, I'm going to be good. Well, I get there. Well, actually, just a few more million with all the taxes I've just paid, everything going, if I can just get to there, there's never going to be a satisfaction. That won't take place. So we see a man who loves money in our text, but enough is never enough. He's not satisfied. Let's look over in 1 Timothy chapter 6. It says, but they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, while which some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. We see the destruction here that comes from the love of money that it's never going to be able to satisfy. It's going to lead to temptations and traps in your life. It's going to lead to all kinds of hurtful lust, which can destroy you. It's going to lead, as it says, as it finishes, with many sorrows in your life. And our section in Ecclesiastes covers many of those sorrows. You see, it's the love of money that basically begins to taint everything that you do. The issue is not money. Money is like a gun. It's amoral. It's how you use a gun. You can use a gun to go kill a moose and feed your family. That's a good thing. If somebody uses it for murder, that's an evil thing. What's at issue is not money that determines the evil, it's the heart that's controlling it. You can serve with your money, giving tithes, taking care of your family, do what's right with it, or you can serve money. We've probably all heard it said this way before. You can either worship with your money or you can worship your money. See, the love of money means that's where your heart is. That's where your hope is. It's in your wealth. That's your comfort, your joy, your security. It's all wrapped up in your bank account. That's what controls your decisions. That's the love of money. Your trust is in the wrong thing. I read one man who said this. I thought it was a good point. He says, our money says, on it in God we trust. He said, it should say, in this we trust. The fact is, money is not the key to satisfaction. It's not the key to happiness. It does not satisfy. It's almost like a mirage. I remember, I think it was the cartoon Popeye growing up, watching Popeye. I think it was that. I was trying to remember which cartoon it was. I remember being a little boy, and one of them always used a mirage. You'd be in the desert, you know, nothing to drink, ready to die in the cartoon. And in the distance, he'd see this beautiful oasis. And he'd run to it, thinking he had this. But once he got there, realized it was all just an illusion. Well, that's exactly what money does. It presents an illusion of happiness. It makes you think, oh yes, this is going to be so good if I just had this. It's an illusion. It's not going to lead to genuine joy in your life. That's not what's going to take place. And yet multitudes live to that end. You can think about it. Solomon, who is the richest man still to this day who has ever lived, had the most lavish lifestyle any man could live in the history of the world, for that matter. And yet you see him over and over again declaring his unhappiness. So he lists here the sorrows and problems that wealth brings. He says, you think you have it, it's just an illusion. He says, here's what's really going to happen when you obtain wealth. The first problem he brings up is in verse 11. And boy, is this one true. Verse 11 back in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 says this. It says, when goods increase, so wealth is coming, they are increased that eat them. And what good is thereof to the owners thereof, saving the beholding of them with their eye? See, he's saying, when your wealth increases, so do the devourers of your wealth. Your wealth will be chipped away. There are going to be those who's going to eat away at it, is the illustration that's given. You see, because there's increased responsibility that comes with wealth. All of a sudden now, you're having to do things you've never had to do before. You're paying accountants. You're paying more in taxes. You're paying laborers, household workers. All these extra things are coming up. Then you have those friends and family who all of a sudden need your help every day with something. They're eating away at it. Boy, I saw this in P&G a lot. I had the man I led to the Lord in the very last, the day I flew out, had owned one of the trade stores and was, Marion had led his wife to the Lord. They ended up joining the work in Namatanai. And when he would come to talk to me, over the years. I mean, we were there for 12 years. You can see that the heartache he had and the constant of anybody in the family coming to him and constantly having to supply the funds. There were always those devouring. As his wealth increased, that's what took place. I've heard this story when I've read about different athletes who were once millionaires and today are completely broke. I'm thinking of one player in particular who I've read, he wrote about it, how he ended up with nothing. It was what happened right here in verse 11. He talked about crooked managers and paying these salaries and this and that and these recommendations that he needed that was supposed to be good financial advice that never took place. And it was just dwindling to the point he was finally broke. You can think of those that we've probably all read. I know I have. I know there's even one book about it. Those who have won lotteries and how their life ends up in destruction. All of a sudden the devourers come out. Several of them saying over and over that they had wished, use their words, they had never won the lottery. Of all the problems that came with the wealth. Solomon knew this very well. He knew all the concerns and the anxiety, which we're going to get to next, that came with wealth. This is why so many dads wanted, by the way, to have Solomon marry one of their daughters. So they could get something from him. So he says, as your wealth increases, so do the devourers. Verse 12, he gives the next problem or sorrow that comes with wealth. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he eat little or much, but the abundance of the rich will not suffer him to sleep. We see anxiety is here. I remember when I was in the Air Force, just new in the Air Force and fuels guy, when I left work, it was easy. Piece of cake. I was home. There was no other thoughts of work or anything else like that. Going to bed was pretty easy. But as responsibility increased, guess what happened? You think I can just go home? You think I go home now and I'm no longer a pastor? Oh yeah, piece of cake. That's not how that works. So he's saying for the laboring man that doesn't have much of the responsibility that can come with wealth, the sleep comes. But when you have responsibility, anxiety can come in. And remember, he's going to give a solution to this. It's not a must in a Christian's life by any means. This is not what should happen, but it does happen to all of us. So anxiety comes in. Again, for those who are wealthy, many times there are many concerns that come with the wealth. You think about this. Remember the company that made the news, what was it 10, 15 years ago, called Enron? Remember that company? I think they were worth about $20 billion at the time. I think it was around $20 billion was the estimate the company was worth. You think about what happened there. What I want you to think about, though, is those few in positions that ran the company and how they weren't sleeping at all. Because what happened with that company was this. All of a sudden, the company started, they said billions coming in, but the expenses were great. The wealth was being devoured. They were going under. And so what they decided to do was fake it. Let's prop up the stock price. Let's not let the shareholders know what's really going on. They didn't want it to plummet. It got to a point where they realized this is going to break. And several people in key leadership went and sold the stock at the higher. Anyhow, people went to jail over it. But you can think of the responsibility when those revenues started plummeting on them. From the outside, everybody thought, wow, look at that company. But could you imagine the anxiety of those who were running that company? With increased wealth comes increased anxiety. Verse 13, pain. He says, your devourers increase in 11 and 12, anxiety is going to come. Verse 13, there's a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. He said, listen, this is going to hurt you. It's going to lead to pain and hurt in your life, whether through stress, the wealth, and that can take different forms. It could be the wealth. I can think of many examples that came to mind. Those who had money and used it to abuse drugs, alcohol, just destroying their life, their body physically. And of course, the wealth hurting them spiritually. The Bible gives warning and warning over to those who obtain wealth and forgetting about God, think you no longer need Him. I assure you, that wealth is now to your hurt. So pain. We see this with the nation of Israel. How during times of prosperity, we saw the nation actually spiritually hurt because of it. Verse 14. The wealth can just disappear. He says, but those riches perish by evil travail. And he begotteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. Says here, here's something else can happen to your riches. Before you know it, it's gone. Evil travail means something bad took place. Maybe it was a bad business deal. Maybe a calamity took place. But all of a sudden, you thought your future was secure for yourself and your children, and it ends. And all of a sudden, because that's what your life was all about. Remember, he's dealing with people with life under the sun. What's vanity? Life apart from God. And for that group, once that takes place, what they're trusting in, what their life was about, it's over. There's nothing else. And so he says, listen, that wealth can disappear just like that. It can be gone. Maybe it'll be stolen from you, a bad business deal, whatever it is. All of a sudden it's gone, and your trust for the future was in the trust for the future was in the wrong place. So that wealth can disappear. We know the Bible teaches that. It can, you know, make like eagle's wings and fly away. Verse 15 and 16, we see this. Even if you're able to keep that wealth, even if that doesn't take place, it's not going with you when you die. Even if you keep it, if that doesn't happen, let's say you're able to keep it to the day you die. Look at 15 and 16. As he came forth of his mother's womb, naked shall he return to go as he came, and shall take nothing of his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is a sore evil, that in all points as he came, so shall he go. And what profit hath he that hath labored for the wind? So he's saying, listen, when you die, that's it. It's not going with you. You're not taking your wealth with you. You take nothing when you die. And of course, this shows an amazing lack of wisdom. We are here for such a short time frame. Yet the vast majority of the going on 7 billion people on this earth are simply living for the here and now. We're here for just a drop in the, just such a small time frame, not living for eternity. And if you accumulate mass wealth, when you die, that's it. None of it goes with you. One of the greatest examples of somebody who had wealth right. I'm going to give three. I'm going to finish my conclusion with two other ones. I want to give one right now. He's coming to mind. That's Job. Job was a very wealthy, wealthy man. But he's an example of a man whose wealth never led to these problems. They did not. He did not have that. He's going to be following the principles that we've seen 18, 19, and 20. Proof of Job, of the character he had, was when he lost it all. When he lost it all, naked came I out, naked shall I return. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. The wealth did not have him. That's never what he was living for. It was not. Verse 17, the sixth thing that's listed here is loneliness. All his days also he eateth in darkness, and he hath much sorrow and wrath with the sickness. The sickness is speaking of that love of money, what he's been living for, what's been controlling him. He eateth in darkness. The word eateth here implies, when you match up Strong's or any of the word studies, it talks about to devour. It has the idea of you're living and being devoured. You can almost picture it here. The wealthy man being burned so many times, having to question every single person's motive who wants to be friends with him. Not knowing if it's genuine or not. He doesn't know who to trust. Eating should imply joy, but his life is misery and sorrow. So it has him eating in darkness. It's all a mirage. When that's all you're living for and that becomes your life, it taints all your decisions. But now, for the last point, we see real joy regardless of riches, whether you have them or not. Verse 18. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor that he taketh under the sun of all the days of his life, which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God. For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. Just some really good stuff here. So let's look at this, because it does get into a key to joy in life. Because we're led to believe in our Western culture that if you just get to financial security, you're going to find peace. That's not true. Finding what life is about is not found in your career. It's found in God. Verse 18 deals with the laborer. Verse 19 deals with the wealthy. You have the one who doesn't necessarily have a lot, then you have the one who is wealthy. Both are being dealt with in the text. There's a way that both can have joy. He said it's good for you to enjoy your labor. And that is a good thing. The wealthy can rejoice in what God has given them. The key in the text here is seeing that it is from God and for God. You can, even a wealthy man can have life without anxiety. The pain that wealth brings, the loneliness, the frustration. Simply by recognizing and making your life, recognizing it's from God and life is all about God. The wealthy and the laborer can avoid the heartaches and have joy when God is in the right place. You see, the wealthy man here sees it's from God. His concern is the Lord. Not the wealth or the concern to try and keep the wealth. Just like Job didn't care. It's gone. It doesn't change why I was living. I wasn't living to accumulate wealth. God blessed me with it. He took it away. It doesn't change who I am before God. It doesn't change what I was living for. He's saying that's how the person can rest in it because it's not your life. It's not what you're consumed with. All of a sudden somebody gets all this wealth and that becomes their life. They're living life apart from God. Now you can see the anxiety coming in. The fretting. I got to protect this. The worrying. The frustration. And then if it goes, oh, man, my life is over. No, the focus was wrong the entire time. When life is about God, you see, contentment does come in. And with contentment comes satisfaction. Rest comes. Listen, if you're in a stressful situation because of wealth, responsibility, remember, life is about God. He has you where you're at. You trust Him. If God takes the wealth, you trust Him. If He blesses it, you trust Him. That's what you do. You don't fret over it. You trust Him. That's what He's saying. It's a gift from God. What you have, your strength, your labor, what He's given you, it's from God. We're stewards. It's not up to you to try and stress, how do I keep this together? You just simply love God and serve Him, and you trust Him with that. You see the goodness of God in your situation. Here's a great quote as I conclude the message. This is from a commentator written going back. I couldn't even find where. I know it's going back to about the 18th century, but I couldn't end up finding who said it or whoever. But nonetheless, said, he is rich, not who possesses much, but who desires little. I thought, wow, that's actually really good. There's two examples I want to close with. I'm not going to turn there for time's sake. Both men who had wealth, but the wealth did not have them. Abraham is one. Abraham is an example of that. Abraham is never living to obtain wealth. God blessed him. And he had abundance. But you understand, Abraham would be the same man just like Job if it was all gone. It was never about that. David is another. Understand, a significant portion of Solomon's wealth, guess where it came from? David. But the difference with those men, God was their life. They never sought out to be the wealthiest man. They simply sought God. So what we learn from this, of course, is always keep the Lord first. Don't serve money. Make money be your servant. Don't allow money to become your God. It's a mirage. And if you actually obtain what you're living for, it's going to do nothing but lead to pain, anxiety, trouble, devours. Because you're doing it as if God's not there, just like Solomon. You simply trust God and follow Him. If He blesses you, however He decides. Understand there's blessing in both, whether it was just the laborer was blessed, or if God decided, well, it's a moot point. Either way God decides to do it, that's not what's critical. It's serve Him and trust Him and love Him. That's what it's all about. And whether He chooses, whichever way He chooses to bless you, both are blessings, by the way. Love Him and serve Him. That's what it's all about, with heads bowed and eyes closed. Let me ask this question. This, of course, a message for our church and such an important Bible principle that we're looking at in the day we live in and the obsession with materialism and living for the next big thing and the eye is just never satisfied. But maybe you're here and you're not even certain if you were to die right now that you'd go to heaven, or that's been bothering you for weeks right now. You don't know what would happen to you. Listen, that's what you need to settle above all. Of knowing what's going to happen to you when you die. Say, Pastor, please, I need you to pray for me. I don't know what's going to happen to me. That has been bothering me. I'm not certain that I've truly been converted. It's been on my mind. Please pray for me. If that's you, would you just raise your hand where I can see it? Raise your hand. Let me acknowledge it and put it back down. Anybody here like that at all? Just put your hand up where I can see it. Then put it back down. I see a couple of small children. If you did raise your hand, I did not see it. All right, Christian. If the Lord worked on your hearts tonight, why don't you come and pray? Father in heaven, bless this invitation, work in hearts and lives. So I pray this in Christ's name. Amen. Let's all stand to our feet. Let's turn to page.